Yo, what's the heavy hitter DJ Wala, and you're now plugged into the Subject Thread Podcast with your host, Nyla Lavelle.
Like, there are certain people that have these ability to be independent contractors, self-employed, day traders, real estate investors, singers, artists, those type of people. Avenues within the real estate umbrella, because there's so many different ways to make money in real estate. I think a lot of people miss that.
Right. And that's very true, because when you say real estate, that's the umbrella, right? That's what, and then there's so many other strategies. So real quick, what I'll do for our listeners is explain a little bit about what wholesaling real estate is.
I like that question, because with Kanye, I was just talking about this yesterday, and I feel like with Kanye, he's like, he does things that we all do behind closed doors.
Yeah, I've never been asked that.
It's a Subject Thread Podcast. We different here.
You are now tuned in to Subject Thread Podcast, giving you real dose of storyboard conversations, art, money, culture, and more.
All right, guys, this is your girl, Nyla Lavelle in the building, co-host for Subject Thread Podcast, and I have a very, very special guest in the building. He is a James Beard award-winning chef. He is also the founder of Field Trip in Harlem, and he is also the author of Between Harlem and Heaven. We have Mr. Chef JJ Johnson in the building. Welcome, Chef.
Thank you for having me. Well, you put the Mr. in front of my name. Thank you.
Absolutely. We have Harlem in the building, guys. That's what's up.
You got to stand up. Everybody got to stand up for that, you know.
So are you from Harlem, born and raised?
You know, I'm not from Harlem, born and raised.
Okay.
My dad is from Harlem. He claims Harlem in the Bronx.
Okay, cool.
I was in Harlem the last, I would say, my adulthood. So half of my life has been in Harlem. All my aunts live in Harlem. My cousins live in Harlem. So Harlem is in my DNA regardless. You know, think about the people that came to Harlem. Like, my grandmother left North Carolina at 16 years old and got on a bus and came to Harlem. My grandfather left Mississippi and, you know, was able to buy an apartment, a condo in Harlem, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Harlem was always a part of my childhood. Did I ever think I would open a restaurant in Harlem or live in Harlem? Probably not, but it's a great community. The people are amazing. It's always vibrant and colorful. It's a great thing.
Facts. I mean, you're talking to someone that was pretty much born and bred in Harlem, East 106. So
East 106 and where?
And Park.
That's so crazy. When I the first place I lived in Harlem was in Lakeview.
Oh, on 107th really?
And 5th. That's bananas. That's where my aunt lives. So, like,
okay, so you know.
That's where my cousins grew up.
Yeah.
That's funny.
That was a time, let me tell you. And it's gentrified so much. I'm kind of on the fence about it. I actually remember one time in the 80s, I'm kind of giving my age a little bit away, but in the 80s, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, by the way.
Okay.
And I remember a time in Harlem where they were giving out the brownstones for a dollar. And my dad said to me the other day, like, you know what? He was running the streets. He was a bonehead. And he was like, I really wish I would have taken the time to at least get one. Because, you know, you can't even get a brownstone for under $1 million right now.
Yeah, but that's just crazy, right? Like, I just think about it. And people talk about society is that the people that were buying those brownstones, yes, there's some black people, but a lot of those people that bought those brownstones in that era, right, were Irish, Jewish, Italians. Right?
Community.
People that were community people, right? Mm-hmm. Community leaders washing one hand and give to make sure they got taken care of and gave it to the other. But if we would have just paid attention, I say we, like black people, like would have been able to pay attention, and there's just so much going on in our lives, we could have mm-hmm. We could have had a whole block.
You're right about that. So anytime, I just want to put this out to our listeners, anytime you see in the paper when the government or the state is selling like abandoned properties that you think are not going to be worth anything for like $1 or $2, they give those sales. They're very rare. But anytime they happen, you should definitely jump on them. Do your research and try to jump on them. That's my suggestion.
Yeah. I mean, you see it happening. You saw it happen in Detroit, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You saw it happen in Oakland. Look at Oakland now. So I remember when I first came to New York in 2000, like living in New York right after college in 2003, and brownstones were going for 30, 40,000.
Which was still a good buy.
My cousin, she was in the pharmaceutical world, and some guy, one of her coworkers, was like, yo, I just bought a brownstone. And she was like, you bought a brownstone? There's no brownstones for sale. She was like, yeah, they're going for like $40,000. She's like, what? She went and bought three brownstones, not telling nobody in the family.
Ooh. Boss.
Right? Right. And then she basically built one up, flipped it, lived in another one, got that right, flipped it. And she's been now, she's ingrained in like that brownstone, you know, townhouse, limestone, all these crazy things. And if you're from New York, right, you know these different things. Yeah. So she, I remember one year she came to me and was like, you need to buy this at $450,000. I'm like, listen, I'm 25. I don't have no money for $450,000. That same brownstone is now worth $3 million.
Yeah, same.
You know? So it's just like, you got to, you know, you got to find a will in a way. And I think that's how we kind of, we have to be able to move the needle, and we have to purchase like either land or abandon it. Even if you don't use it, you have something to leverage when you have an asset to leverage. So that's
absolutely
what I'm about in life these days.
Absolutely. And T.I. just actually, he made a statement about that. He was like, you know, guys, as the Black community, minority communities, we got to put down the Louis and the Vuittons and all of that and start buying land and real estate. So you see, we already chopping it up about in entrepreneurship already in the beginning of the conversation. I love it. What got you into cooking?
So, you know, I grew up in the Poconos. My dad didn't want me growing up in New York City in the 80s and the 90s.
Yay.
And we're a PA up. And my mom is from Long Island. My grandfather retired, sold his home very quickly, went to Pennsylvania. We all bought, my mom, my aunt, my grandfather, we all bought homes. They all bought homes three blocks away from each other. And my mom is Puerto Rican and West Indian. And my Puerto Rican grandmother, you're talking about somebody that was old, didn't know what to do. She would just cook all day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I would just be with her in the kitchen on the step stool. And she was just injecting like food DNA into my body. I really didn't watch cartoons in the early days of my life. I was just in the kitchen with her. And then it just kind of, I told my mom at 8, I was going to be a chef. My mom was like, no, you're going to be a doctor or a politician or a school teacher. You're going to get a government job where you can retire. And I was like, nope, I ain't doing that. And I always was in the kitchen. I was a dishwasher at a country club. I went to culinary school, Culinary Institute of America, upstate New York, right outside of Poughkeepsie in Hyde Park. And then I worked in, you know, great restaurants in New York City. My claim to fame is a restaurant in Harlem called the Cecil. But then I left there about 4 or 5 years ago and wanted to spread my wings. And now I have a fast casual restaurant that's a rice bowl shop called Field Trip. We have two locations, one in Harlem and one at the U.S. Open. I worked for a company called Restaurant Associates, and I was the sous chef at Morgan Stanley Executive Dining Room. And the president of Morgan Stanley, a guy named Ed Brown, he was a well-known chef. He kind of closed his restaurants. I was a fan of his, and I always would like reach out to him and drop him a note. Right, I'm a person of like you have to network. If you're going to progress, you have to figure out how to get in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Before you kind of get to the table, right? And then once you're at the table, like, how do you make the table yours? So, like, Ed Brown was a good guy. He would always come by the restaurant or the unit. We would talk. And then, you know, we kept in contact as I went back into the private world. And I reached out to him and said, hey, man, I have this. It was a long shot, right? I have this fast casual concept. I think it's delicious. Here's what we've done. And I would like to put it at the U.S. Open. He came back and was like, we don't put people at the U.S. Open unless you have a brick and mortar. Like, you have to have a physical space. And I was like, yeah, I get that. I understand it. But you know me, my food's good. I have a little bit of a name for myself. So he was like, you know something? Put together a brand deck. And if the USTA likes it, then we'll figure out next steps. I put together the brand deck. I stayed on him twice a month. And next thing I know, he's like, well, they want to do a tasting with you. So I went to the U.S. Open. I did a tasting in front of all these people. They liked the food. And they said, hey, we have this really small location. do you want this small location? And I took it. And in the first year, we didn't make money. I lost some money, but I was there. I learned a lot about the Field Trip brand. And we then, a couple months later, I opened a Field Trip. And then I asked them to move me to like primetime location. Last year, we were in the heart of the Open. Kind of ESPN called us the new stadium food. We did really well financially. We would have been there again this year. So it was like, you know, risk and reward, like threw it out there. And what was like the worst thing somebody can say? All they could say is no.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for our new listeners that don't know anything about a brand deck, can you specify what that actually is for them, for our entrepreneurs?
So a brand deck is not a lot. It's like 6 to 10 slides. And it just is a lot of amazing pictures that people can see and taste what it feels like. And some of those slides will just be like your mission statement, maybe your demographic, who do you believe will eat this food? Who will eat? For me, it's like, who would eat this food or who will purchase this item? Mm-hmm. What it looks like, where is it located, and who's involved?
Dope. You said it right.
That's where you start. Yeah, you know?
No, you said it right. To me, it's like, it's a condensed business proposal without all of those bells and whistles, because a business proposal is absolutely absurd sometimes. So you definitely said it right. What is your favorite dish that you like to cook?
Oh, I love making oxtails. I was literally thinking about it this morning. Like, I need, like, it's fall is coming, and why not just like just rock out and do some like curry oxtails and like a one pot dish with like chickpeas and sweet potatoes. You know, I'm just a sucker for oxtails. It's just something about it. It's just homey to me. It's comforting. It's delicious. It's fatty. So yeah, you know, if I'm coming to your house, I'm probably bringing the pan of oxtails with me, because I know everybody loves the oxtail.
And that's dope for my meat eaters. Now for my vegan people, my vegan friendly people, what do you think is your favorite dish that you like to cook?
Oh, you know, I'm a rice connoisseur, so I'm probably bringing the pineapple black fried rice. Ooh. from Field Trip, and it has edamame beans in there for protein. It has some fresh pineapple for freshness and sweetness. It has some spice, some carrots, onions, and celery. That's what I'm bringing. And you know, I know a lot of people look at rice as like the side dish, but for me, rice is a main dish.
And you can just get a bowl
of that. And if you want more, just keep throwing more vegetables on top, and it's going to be good.
So basically, when someone comes in your restaurant, give me the experience. When they come in, are they a la carte? Do they pick what they want? How does it go?
So Field Trip is very similar to like a Chipotle.
Okay.
So you order from the counter. So you walk into Field Trip, you should automatically hear "Welcome to Field Trip" from somebody or multiple people behind the counter. Like, that's how you should be welcomed. And then you come up to the counter and you order. Everything on the menu is roughly under $13. And you should get, you know, a rice bowl that can be the pineapple black fried rice with salmon and peri-peri sauce. One of my favorite bowls is the coconut sticky rice with shrimp and green curry. All the bowls have collard greens and sweet potato and shishito peppers. So you should get a rice bowl, some crab pockets, which is like our crab ragoons, like dragon fruit lemonade. And hopefully when indoor dining comes back, you can get sake or a rice beer that we have, and like sit down and chill with your closest friends.
Now, how has the pandemic affected your business? Are people still coming in to buy, to take out?
Yeah, you know, for me, you know, I had to pivot. And when I say pivot, I had to think different, right? Mm-hmm. Or had to think quicker. And in the heart of the pandemic, I was like, how can I keep this business open? I'm the first business owner in my family, sorry.
Nice. Cool.
And, you know, I can't close these doors because I don't want to let down my mom, my dad, my wife, my kids. Like, I can't let down people, people, like, that are my backbone. And we started to feed frontline workers. Then we started to feed children. And that helped define the brand of Field Trip. People, like, would come and be like, oh, my God, these people are here with us. But also, these people have jobs and we want to support them. These people live in our community. We don't want to see this restaurant close. So for us, we were able to like really push through the heart of the pandemic.
Okay, cool.
you know, some, yeah, we, you know, some of our sales decreased, but we were able to push through. And I think who we are now would have taken me 2 to 5 years to get to in the 5 months that what we did during the heart of COVID.
So question for you, in the restaurant business, on average, they say it takes about 24 months to actually turn a profit. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would say that. That's 100% accurate.
Okay. So right off the bat, a lot of times people that just get into business and they just think, oh, I'm going to make money right off the bat. But you're here to say it takes about 24 months for you to get your feet wet.
You have to realize, like, you're not going to open the doors and potentially make money. You don't even know who you are as a business. Everything is like monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
Like your numbers are these projections that you pulled out the air or you did market research with. You're like, who do you think your customer is? This customer, you think people are gonna like this way, and then you learn. So I think, you know, 3 months in, I got to learn who Philtrip was, and luckily I wasn't losing money. Right, we were like breaking even, or if we were losing money, it was like very small amount of money, mm-hmm. right? And you know, you want to make sure when you do have a business, right? New business. You want to have some reserve money in the bank too.
Absolutely.
You are gonna have bad weeks, bad days, bad months, bad quarters, right?
Entrepreneur talk. You're speaking that talk. Talk it.
So, I think the biggest advice I can give is like you have to learn how to really manage your cash, watch the cash. Like the business doesn't close because, like, the bank doesn't close because it went into credit card business. The bank closed because it wasn't paying attention to their cash flow. And that's a very important part of the business. So like, yeah, at the 24 month mark, you should know who you are as a business now, and you should be able to turn a profit. Like how to staff right, how to purchase goods, with hours of operation, you know? And if you're lucky, maybe you don't need a lot of staff. Maybe you can operate at a very, you know, slim team, then to rev up. And I mean, you know this, right? A lot of people look at big brands and like want to be that brand right when they open up. And that's impossible. You'll never be. Like I'll never be what Sweetgreen is or Chipotle right now. I'm looking at who they were when they first opened. I want to look at the first Chipotle and see what it looks like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at that, it's like janky. But, you know?
I actually love the name though. I love the name, like Philtrip Harlem. It's like, yo, that was so super creative. Did you go through a bunch of names before you got that one?
Oh, so many. The name that I thought I was going to go with when we went to trademark, it was taken by like a super large food service group.
Ooh.
And I was like, I'm good. And then we went with Philtrip. You know, Philtrip, you're going on a trip around the world. When you come into the restaurant, you're literally on a field trip. You can eat something from somewhere. And hopefully it takes you there.
Dope, dope, dope. Now, how did the book come about, Harlem and Heaven?
So Between Harlem and Heaven was a book from my time at the Cecil.
Okay.
The original name of that book was supposed to be called the Cecil, but then after the restaurant closed, we had to change the name. So it's like the heart and the movement of the Cecil. It's with Alexander Smalls and Veronica Chambers. Mm. It's a story of, like, for me, the title Between Harlem and Heaven is like, if you're... Harlem is like one of the greatest places in the world before you'll get to heaven.
Mm.
You know, and hopefully you're not in between.
Yo, that's like a headbuster. But Harlem is so dope though. Like, I mean, it's so rich, and just the history, the Renaissance era, and then, you know, James Baldwin, and just different elements and Apollo. People don't they don't understand. If you have not taken the time to visit Harlem and you come to New York and you just want to go to 42nd Street, that's not it. Go to Harlem.
Yeah.
Go to BK. There's certain elements in New York that you got to hit.
No, right. And what you get in Harlem, you can't get nowhere else.
Yes.
I don't have to tell you that, right? Like the gentleman on the corner, yeah, he might holler at you, but he's also going to walk with you to make sure you're safe. Like, hold on, let me just walk with you to the next block, to the next corner. Right.
Yep.
Or if you don't say hello back, it's like, well, why aren't you saying hello back? Do you have a problem today? You know, it's kind of like the place is just embraced with hospitality and comforting, right? And I think a lot of people don't understand that that's just what the culture is. Like you walk in West Village, nobody says anything to you. and people believe that that's what New York City is. But when you start getting into like the heart of New York City, when you get into Harlem, Queens, the Bronx, Staten Island, you know, Washington Heights, Dyckman, you know, those places are that's what defines New York City.
That's factual. And, you know, a lot of people think like, oh, you're from the tri-state area, you from New York or certain parts of Jersey, like you're just angry. And I'm like, no, it's not. I tell people all the time, because I spend a lot of time in different states, and I tell people all the time that it's a misconception that you think that people are just so angry. Yeah, everybody's in a rush, we're going, but if something goes down, New Yorkers will stick together faster than you think.
Yo, it's the heavy hitter DJ Wala, and you're now plugged into the Subject Thread Podcast with your host, Nyla Lavelle.
Well, look, through the pandemic, Cuomo said wear a mask. Everybody started wearing a mask.
Facts.
Right?
Facts.
The hood was wearing a mask, and if you wasn't wearing a mask, they told you put a mask on. The deli started selling masks, right? So, like, and now, look, New York is one of the safest places when you look at the pandemic or COVID cases. Because people are wearing a mask. People are doing what they're being told to do, right? Like, I don't want to be responsible for potentially killing somebody. So people don't wear a mask.
Absolutely. Now, you are also a member of the Food Bank of New York City. Speak to me on that, the give back. So,
yeah, I'm really big. You know, at one point as a chef, you know, you get all these emails from people like, can you do this event? Can you help this organization? Can you do this? And I realized through my journey that food insecurity, nutritional insecurity is a big thing of mine that I'm very soft in my heart about. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I would walk by the Food Bank in New York City on 116th and between Frederick Douglass and Adam Clayton Powell. And you know, I'm not from New York, because you would say between whatever that is, 7th and 8th. I call it about a block. But you know, the line would get longer and longer every day. And I was like, and I used to think it was homeless people, mm-hmm. but it wasn't. It was misconception, right? Mm-hmm. The assumption. It was like your next door neighbor that is on a lunch break and they don't have money to get lunch to buy food. And they go into the food bank for lunch. Mm-hmm. So I was like, hold on, let me get involved. Let me figure out how to help. And, you know, I volunteer, I auction myself off. I try to do what's right in the heart of my community, Harlem or New York City. But, you know, people don't get good food and people don't get food at all. And if I can just help one person get a meal that day, then I feel like I'm doing something right.
Now, that's definitely super, super, super dope. Do you ever think about expansion out of New York City?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I hope that I can bring field trips all around the country one day, and that we can be a really big brand to help bridge communities. I see field trips in Detroit, Oakland, Atlanta's, Charlotte, Miami's, or just like, you know, a small town like Allentown, Pennsylvania, or DC, or outside of, you know, or Baltimore, Maryland. It's something about the field trip brand that it talks to the working class people of America. And that's where I hope I can put them, so people can get like really delicious food at an affordable price.
Okay, super dope, super dope. Now, if it wasn't Harlem or New York, where else would you think you would want to cook?
If it wasn't Harlem or New York, where else would I cook right now in my life? Mm-hmm. You know, right at this moment, I think I would cook in Washington, D.C.
Okay, Chocolate City.
Right. And they need, you know, like Chocolate City needs a chef that, or a restaurant that they can say is theirs. That's a black chef, right? And I think they missed that at times. I think there's been people in that city that have been able to do that and connect with them, and then they leave and turn their backs and go to another. They want to go to the next. They want to come to New York, but it's nothing like having a city or a town behind you, right? My buddy in Atlanta owns a donut shop called Sublime Donuts. You know, he has three Sublime Donuts.
Yo, really?
Yes, my college. That's my college roommate. That's like my college roommate.
I love that place. And you know what? I'm going to reach out to him and I'm going to ask him to talk to him.
He's the man.
Like, Sublime, yo.
That's my guy.
That's the spot that we go to at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes when I'm in Atlanta? See how that works?
See how that works? Yeah, but like, you know, I watch, you know, when you talk about somebody, like a place when people uplift you, you know, like Kamal, like, cashed out his 401k and was like, I want to open up a donut shop where I'm from. And, and the city got behind him. And look, he got stadiums. He's 24-hour donut shop.
Yo,
right?
Let me tell you, that's my go-to.
That's great. You got me hyped. Because that's family, you know. We throw parties in college together.
That's what's up. What college did you attend?
Culinary Institute of America, like right next door to Marist and Vassar.
Okay.
So small culinary school upstate New York. So we used to throw parties. You know, we were entrepreneurs our whole life. So when I look at people and their success, I look at cities or towns and like how they uplift. Mm-hmm. And I believe that if Field Trip can make it in Harlem, it can make it anywhere in the world, because Harlem will uplift you and then present you to the world and present you to the rest of New York City, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, they always say, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. You can kind of go through anything. And I believe that narrative. It makes you, it's a different kind of tough.
Very tough, yes. Very different type of tough.
Now tell me about Just Eats with Chef JJ.
So Just Eats is my cooking show on the Cleo Network, which is a subsidiary of TV One. We're in our second season. I bring on two guests on every episode, some people you might know, some people you do not know. And the point of the show is like to celebrate Black excellence around the table of food and cooking food that's recognizable in different ways and having the hard conversations. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other day when my friend brought this up the other day, and it was like, you know, Sean King has never been on anybody's, he's never on anybody's show talking about activism or what's going on in America. Like on big networks. And he was like, well, you had him and his wife on your show. Mm-hmm. That means something, right? And me and Sean had like a really, we didn't have a deep conversation. It was very lighthearted. But at the end, we talked about like raising Black sons, right? And not teaching, and his biggest thing was like, I'm not teaching my Black sons about slavery first. I'm building them up. I'm teaching them that there's kings and queens and, you know, and then as I'm teaching them, then slavery happened and this stuff. And I think we have to be uplifting our Black children. So we had like really a really great conversation. Or, you know, Yandy came on the show.
We did this burger battle,
right? We did this burger battle, and you know, she says her kids will watch the show, and Yandy went to high school with my cousin, so there's a family connection there, right? My cousin's still best friends with her. And she goes, you know, they say Uncle JJ just cooks better than you, you know, and then you have those conversations. But then you talk about her as an entrepreneur and how she's been able to be on television and then shaped to this potentially $1 billion beauty business. So it gives people what I consider hope, Black people hope, to be like, oh my God, I didn't know that about you or how you got there. And now I want to be you, or I want to be better than you. Or if I want to have a hard conversation in my family or with my friends, let me get some food out. Let me cook. Let me bring them in the kitchen. Let's open up a bottle of wine. And then maybe we'll have this fluid conversation that we've not been able to have, because, you know, food just connects you and opens up the gateway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you can break bread, you can kind of like do anything. It's like music.
Right. Exactly.
So when you're cooking by yourself, is there any kind of music or ambiance that you're creating for yourself?
You know, when I was a couple of years ago and I'd be like in my real creative space, I would listen like Frank Ocean.
Ooh.
And really like rock out with Frank and listen to him. And he like brings you to places and moments. And I love that about his music.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I always, when I'm like in this mood of I don't know what to cook, I always go back to 90s hip hop and R&B. It, for me, is just like the most magical music of my time. I can remember me driving my 94 Honda Accord, what I did, where I was when that song plays. And that just like, I'm able to celebrate that music, because that music in that time, people never thought was going to become so big. And it's like, it's just good to hear like Lauren and Mariah and Diddy and Wu-Tang, you know, like these artists that people that are big deals and were pushing to create a way for the next generation. And I think people forget about that.
Absolutely. It's so funny that you say that because we actually just did a nostalgic mix for the podcast with our resident DJ Walla. He's on Hot 97. We just did a 90s nostalgic mix. So I'll make sure to have that sent out to you. And I think it's pretty dope. It'll definitely take you back. Everybody that has been listening to it, they're like, yo, you just took me back with this. And that's what I love about the 90s. It's a different kind of feel.
Way different feel.
Now, Frank Ocean, one of my favorite artists as well. So I'm about to give you a quiz.
Oh, boy. Don't do that to me.
No, I'm not going to give you a quiz like that. But I want to know what's your favorite track by him and why. And then I'll tell you mine's and why.
Oh, what's my favorite Frank Ocean track? Hold on. I'll tell you.
No, you're supposed to know.
No, I'm not good at that. Like, I already knew I was going to fail this. I'm never good at the, like, name that song. What's your favorite Lauryn Hill? Like, I know it. I can sing it. Hold on. What is it? Give me yours. Tell me your favorite.
No,
you know it off the top of your head.
No, I'll tell you mine.
Oh, Channel Orange.
Okay. Channel Orange and why?
He's just talking like great stuff. He's channeling something. He's bringing you somewhere. You know, it just like the melody, the music. And I can relate to some of the things that he talks about.
Okay.
You know, I know what it's like to be around some of the super rich kids, you know, so, but it's just something about it that, you know, it just brings me there.
And Channel Orange is his 2011 release. I believe 2011. So you took it back to almost a decade. I like his first album though. That first album actually was lit. Super Rich Kids and then Sweet Life.
Oh, Sweet Life is amazing.
Oh my gosh. I
should have said Sweet Life. I knew that.
No, Sweet Life is like, it's like so therapeutic and then just beautiful. Like he's singing about mango trees. I mean, like, yo, you know what I'm saying? So it's pretty dope. So I want to tell you mine. Mine is off the 2016 release and it's Pink and White.
I knew you. I should have known that you were going to say that.
Why? Yo.
That Pink and White song is good.
And you know that's Beyonce on the bottom of those tracks, right?
No, I didn't know that.
See, that's the reason why I like it, because she's actually on the last about 60 seconds of it. You can hear her singing and it's like off the chain. And a lot of people don't know that. But you can look what I'm saying up. Pink and White has Beyonce on there.
I believe you.
Look, Frank is that guy. That's dope.
When's he coming back out with the next one?
I don't know. You know, he just suffered something really traumatic. And I wonder what it's going to look like now, because his brother just passed away in that car accident. His younger brother.
That sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wonder what, you know, his mind frame is going to be like. So blessings to the Frank Ocean family. What's next for you?
I think next for me is figuring out how to expand Field Trip, what communities to go in, how to expand. That's very important for me, as the food industry is starting to crumble.
No, don't say that. You
know, no. A lot of your favorite small restaurants are potentially going to close, and you know, everybody needs to go out and support them in their neighborhood, especially Black owned restaurants. You know, a lot of Black owned restaurants couldn't get PPP money, didn't know how to get it, didn't have the right banking information or accounts. You know, so. And I believe that Field Trip is the hope for the industry. And if we can expand at the right time in the right places, we will show that the industry is going to be better and be stronger. And we'll keep hiring people, right? People will be able to stay in the industry and work. So I would say that's for me, working on a Rice book to come out for, I won't be for 2022, but working on that, you know, just rice recipes that you can make at home, very simple and easy. With like, you know, heartfelt cultural stories and some illustrations and some fun stuff in that book.
It sounds like a lot, though.
Just pushing, you know, like just got to push yourself and try to live the, I think, you know, people try to say, you know, I want to live the dream. But, you know, I just want to live my dream. And my dream is being in the food industry and providing for my family.
Now, as an entrepreneur, because you are an entrepreneur, is there anything else that you're involved in other than food, entrepreneur-wise?
Is there anything else I'm involved in entrepreneur-wise besides food? No,
Okay.
I think everything I am supporting my cousin. Now I'm on the back burner, but my cousin started a medical company for depression so people can, you know, log in online, talk to a doctor virtually because it has hit our family and our friend's family. So he created something I think that's really, really cool and it's going to be really big and disrupt the industry.
Is the website already available or not yet?
Yeah, the website is available.
And I think that that's good that you even said that. I actually have a conversation with a psychologist and talking about Black mental health. So I love the fact that you threw that out there with no hesitation, because it is a stigma in our community and needs to stop being a stigma. We all go through things. We all need somebody to talk to. So kudos to you for even mentioning that as a Black
man. Yeah.
Straight
the name. Up. Yeah. The name of his company is called Options MD.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And I mean, like some of these things is like, yo, we have to just uplift and accept some stuff, right? Like we are who we are, right? If you have a depression problem or you need to talk to somebody, why aren't you able to talk about that?
Absolutely.
You know, I was a chef at the Cecil and I look back on my career and I probably was going through some mental health. I would drink and my anger would come out when I was drinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a very uncontrollable anger. And it was probably because I just needed to talk to somebody.
Absolutely. So
I was able to go get a psychiatrist and talk about what was going on at the Cecil, the pressure, long nights, my wife now, girlfriend potentially might leave me, you know, getting beat up by the cops, like all these things, just to go talk to somebody relieves a lot. Now, yes, I was able to talk to my dad and stuff and these things, but it's different, right?
It's very biased. It's unbiased. Yes.
So more now than ever, we have to make sure we're supporting our community in the right ways. And nobody needs to be getting beat down by their friends or their family because you see a psychiatrist because you're depressed or you have mental health issues. Like, you should be making sure they're just good. And like, can you do anything else to help?
Facts. What you said was facts. I actually read something that was super alarming. Black and brown children between the ages of 10 to 19 are like committing suicide at a higher rate now. So it's mental health should not be a stigma in our community. And it's going to take more voices, small and big, medium, large, to address these type of topics. So kudos to you for even bringing that out.
No problem.
Super dope. So how do the people find you?
So you can find me on any social media platform at Chef JJ. You can find me on my website at chefjj.co. You can come by my restaurant Field Trip. It's between 115th and 116th and Malcolm X Boulevard, right in Harlem, New York. And that's the best places to find me. You can DM me. I will respond to you. I try to respond to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
If you have somebody in your life that's in the culinary world or just wants some entrepreneur advice, drop me a line. I am here.
Dope, dope. He said you can DM. Now, listen, if you get a lot of DMs, you just put out a, you know, I don't really answer all my DMs. It's so many. How do you do that? How do you manage that? And you have way more followers than me.
I mean, I try to manage it. Like, listen, I look, I drop a note. If you're really asking, if you're a young kid asking me a question like, hey man, trying to get in the culinary industry, this, that, or I'm a chef in a restaurant. Like, I'll take a couple minutes. Because I remember when I was like that young dude, right?
Absolutely.
And nobody responded back. Now, if you hit me with some crazy stuff, you know, like, hey, in your cookbook, some people do this sometimes, like in your cookbook, that recipe on Just Eats, is that in the cookbook? And I'm like, you will see something while you watch on Just Eats in the cookbook. I can't tell you that everything is in the cookbook, right? So sometimes I might not answer that, or I'll just be like, hey, pick up the cookbook, Amazon, you know? I'm not going to go like super in detail. But I try to gauge and I try to see, and especially for the young G's out there, I try to support them.
Super dope. Super dope. Hey guys, this was a dope conversation with Chef JJ. Make sure if you're in Harlem or if you're in New York City, check out his restaurant at Field Trip Harlem. And we are out. Peace out.
Talk soon.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Subject Thread Podcast. Here's a sneak peek of next week's episode. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Subject Thread, and make sure you visit us online at www.subjectthreadpodcast.com.
Because it was hard studying for, you know, MCATs and things like that, playing basketball. So, but I will say playing definitely helped me build that grit, that tenacity to not give up. It was something that I think I wouldn't have gotten anywhere else. I built so much character playing basketball because, you know, it was a business. You know, if you didn't perform, you're not playing, you know? Mm-hmm. So it built that, like, I'm not giving up. And no matter what they say, no matter how hard they come at me, I'm going to continue to strive. So I think that built me into who I am today and to perform as a physician for my patients.
And I definitely do like your nonprofit Reality Speaks, because you have statistics up there that I don't think a lot of people are aware of, that only 2% of the population that plays sports actually make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.